We will ease your troubled mind with licensed mental health counselor Cheryl Jefferson. Political analysis provided by the Prophet of Rage and calling in from the planet of rhythm and blues, musicologist Professor Soul. From the grassroots, I'm your host, Lanita Duke, on 90.7 FM KBOO in Portland.
Join us on Tuesday, January 21st for Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years. A day of special programming looking back at the Trump regime, what happened, why, and the repercussions domestically and internationally. We'll focus on national policy, foreign policy, privacy and surveillance, policing, immigration, labor rights, confronting white nationalism, the environment, and much more. Again, that's Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years on Tuesday, January 21st from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Wow, I haven't seen you, or we haven't been on the show in this decade yet. How crazy is that?
Well, I'm sorry that the way that we're coming back on air is to talk about the war on Iran.
Yeah, big developments, scary turn of events.
I just came back. I have Lamara Haynes, activist in Portland, in the studio. Hi, Lamara.
We have a guest. Amazing.
Just pull the mic a little bit closer to you.
This?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Just to talk about where we just came from, what happened there, what were people saying, what are your takeaways from this event?
So there was a rally against the potential of war with Iran. And it happened at Terry Shrunk Plaza, which is downtown. And there was about, I can't guess how many people were there. Over 200, I think, is a safe bet. It was interesting. It was good to see that there was a lot of people who came out. I saw people I was familiar with, and obviously a lot more people that I didn't know, never seen before in my life. I think that was a pretty solid turnout for something emergency and short notice.
Yeah, that it had to be an emergency rally, and that we were able to turn out as many people that were as angry about it, I think is a good sign. Mm-hmm. Because there has to be a strong anti-war movement, or else we're going to get pulled into another boondoggle.
Yeah, hearing the how big it was, I'm surprised, just because I feel like I wasn't able to go, and I feel like the last few emergency rallies that I've witnessed in Portland for like issues of U.S. imperialism in the Middle East have not had very large turnouts, and the crowds have been very specific. But I feel like, and I've seen people talking about this, just the time period that this is happening in and the interval this is happening in relation to the war in Iraq, there's a really large capacity for a powerful anti-war struggle in the U.S. right now, because, I don't know, people my age, people 10 years older than me, give or take, have this really recent memory of the disaster in Iraq. Those are my most formative memories as a child are around understanding the war in Iraq.
Yeah, I'm happy that people are not taking the bait and going along with the drums of war, that don't see this as a viable option, that there has to be a better way, and that people aren't getting behind whatever the military wants to do. I'm very happy that that's not on order. So people should go to the Portland DSA Twitter right now, where there were all of the live updates from the event.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not absolving the American military of anything, but I think this is a pretty unique case in the fact that it's the President of the United States mm-hmm. that seems to be acting as his own declarer and executor of war.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's by accident. He has those kind of war hawks around him, Pompeo and company, and people who really seem to be gunning for a war with Iran, not to mention the illegal sanctions, sanctions on like medicine getting into Iran, which obviously we know people need medicine. And also, I don't know, it just seems really fascinating. There's a part of me that's like, I hope that the air quotes progressive elements of the United States ruling class officials can have some common sense. But again, while I was listening to some news reporting today, it seems like folks did know that there was potential for this, and that the Pentagon had put in these, submitted some papers. And within those papers, it didn't explicitly say that no war actions were supposed to be taken against Iran. So like without those things being explicitly stated, for somebody who clearly seems to be off the rails and doing whatever they want, it seems kind of negligent to not have explicitly said that this is not something that is okay to do for the president, mm-hmm. especially since he doesn't follow any rules. So it's like you have to spell things out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's a part of me that wants to be like, okay, since a lot of these people who are in power now, like, went through the Bush administration, saw yes. the devastation that happened in Iraq, and claim that they wouldn't vote for it now.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, okay, well, how did this happen anyway? Like, yeah. Why weren't you paying more attention to this clearly off the rails person who has been gunning for Iran this whole time?
It just seems
strange. I mean, it's not strange, it's America, but.
No, I think what you're saying, like, totally speaks 100% to everything that we've seen from the Democrats throughout Trump's entire presidency, where like there's been already been this fear mongering around Iran, and the Democrats tend to just drag their feet during all of Trump's actions. And then when something finally happens, then they have like a sit-in, like a random sit-in or a random walkout, mm-hmm. and people are on the news ranting and ranting and raving. Gun control. Remember? It was the funny one. Whatever. If you don't agree with me, that's fine. But it was the funny one where
well, it's funny because people know that they don't mean it.
I mean, it was also funny because it was on like, because a gun, it was on something that really wasn't actually, it was kind of racist and helpful. Wasn't it about Trump allowing people on like the terror watch list to stopping people who are on the terror watch list from being able to buy firearms and not enacting new policies, but like the terror watch list is like incredibly racist. Like there are reports about like people who are just Arab who had like the same last name as other terrorists, as terrorists who had the same last name as them, who are just like on the terror watch list and were like trying to get through the airport. So the terror watch list is incredibly racist. So the Democrats like doing something like a sit-in for that was just like, y'all are out of your minds. Like you don't know what the right thing is. But yeah, I agree with Lamara where many of you already watched this almost exact thing happen. This is kind of more intense because with Iraq, we had the really easy fear mongering that really around 9/11, the like Congress and the ruling class like didn't even really have to take part in because there's just a lot of fear that was easily stoked after post 9/11. And approval ratings like went up in response to that, and so this is like more extreme. But these people who know how this system works can see the warning signs, know Trump is off the rails, know who's in his ear, and then are all of a sudden up in arms when this thing that seems to be overnight happens. Yeah, but it's not overnight, because Trump has been fear-mongering around Iran for months since we pulled out of the nuclear deal. Yeah.
Yeah, which didn't have to happen. The nuclear deal was not perfect, but it was going to avert war if kept in place.
Yeah.
And there would have been a chance for diplomacy, but that's not where Trump has ever wanted to be. And he proved it by pulling us out of the Iran nuclear deal, and that's how we got in this situation. For people who are just tuning in and don't know what we're talking about, I was just at a emergency rally called by the Portland DSA and sponsored by multiple organizations across the city. And one of the people who were out there protesting is activist Lamara Haynes in studio. Hi, Lamara.
Hi.
And the background about this is from Democracy Now! Today, Democracy Now! Twice a day, every weekday on KBOO, is that the U.S. assassinated a powerful Iranian general, Qasem Soleimani, at Baghdad airport. This is a major escalation of the conflict between Iran and the United States, which now threatens to engulf Iraq and the Middle East. President Trump authorized a drone strike that killed Soleimani at the Baghdad International Airport and four other people, including a high-level Iraqi militia chief. This is last night, Thursday night, U.S. time, Friday morning in Baghdad. So people should know that this is an act of aggression that the U.S. The Trump administration took without approval from Congress even, and that it was enacted at a public airport. People just should know a little bit about that background, because what I've been hearing in listening to talk radio and cable news, people are focusing on what is the attack going to be like from Iran and how can we stop it, and very little reflection on the wrongness of this attack. And it really speaks at the heart of the idea that the U.S. really can be the world's police and act like a bully in the world. And even after there's been no response, that's what people are up in arms about, and people are not, at least not on corporate news, talking about how wrong that aggression was. That's very concerning.
Yeah, and I also, there's more than one way to attack a country in like the cyber age. So I don't know, from the brief bits I saw on CNN or whatever else that I could stomach this morning, it was just like, there was like this hyper focus on a physical attack, but like the internet is a really easy way to hack an attack, and like different countries have like the capacity to do that. Like that's not just like a US skill.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know, it just seemed as like our world is like constantly changing, the way in which news sources are able to understand the ways that people will take action against the US is still very limited. We all know that the U.S. has a huge military presence, the largest like military in the world, and so people become creative in the ways that they can wage war. I think that's something that isn't really considered in those conversations. And I'm not a war expert. I just found that fascinating, that it was just a hyper focus on just like a physical. Two, Israel and Palestine. And the third one was the police killings of Eric Garner and Mike Brown. And in these three cases, she's talking about how the case of Ray Rice, normative conflict, right? We fight with people, we have arguments, lovers, spats, whatever. For him, a normative conflict was seen as a threat. So he escalated his actions and acted in a way that, to many people, hopefully to most people, seems completely irrational, right? Does not match what happened to you.
Yeah.
The same thing with Israel and Palestine, right? Palestinian people are resisting a colonial oppressor. That resistance is seen as a threat. Although it's not. It's a resistance because you people need to have access to clean water, school, be able to travel without being detained, killed. That is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
The case of Mike Brown, he literally put his hands up and said, don't shoot. Something happened in that police officer's brain where he saw that as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with Eric Garner. I can't breathe. I'm only selling loose cigarettes. The police
officer wasn't selling loose cigarettes either. It's very important.
He wasn't selling loose cigarettes. The police said he was selling loose cigarettes. And that was our justification to killing mm-hmm. him. Those things don't add up, right? Those don't add up to murdering, beating somebody mm-hmm. unconscious, and leading a siege on Gaza for 50 days, killing multiple, many people, displacing even more people, etc. But there's something that's happening where people are overstating conflict
mm-hmm.
and escalating it to the point where they feel like they're being abused. And I feel like that is something that happens consistently with people who are in like positions of domination.
Mm-hmm.
So with the US, like, we have come to consciousness in different ways, whatever the case is. But for a lot of people, people who are watching CNN, people who are watching Fox News, to them, the US is this martyr, right? And mm-hmm. so whenever the US is attacked or questioned, it's as if we're being abused. And because of that, there's never any analysis to be like, oh, perhaps we're abusing mm-hmm. other people.
And it's that's not why even a question.
Well,
yeah.
It's
perhaps, yeah.
Perhaps yeah. It's not a question for us, but I'm talking about the populace.
Mm. No, the problem is that question is not even posed.
Yeah, it's not even posed. Yeah. Like, maybe we're the ones who are being the aggressor. And that's not really, obviously, Congress and people in power are not thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
At least not on a large enough scale. And obviously, President Trump is not thinking about that. I don't know what he thinks about. I wouldn't want to know what he thinks about.
I'm sure it's a very scary place.
But
it's a few very scary things. Like, it can't yeah. be a lot in the things that it is.
But it's just horrible. Something that keeps coming up. It's like we are overstating the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Not me, you, and, you know, Jim, Bob, and Joe. But our government is overstating. They're saying that they're being abused by Iran.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. There's no way. We have too much power.
Mm-hmm.
There's not an equal exchange mm-hmm. of resources and retaliation. There can't be if you have the largest military in the world
mm-hmm.
and you're the world's top power.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah.
how do
yeah.
we get people to stop doing that?
Yeah, Jim, Bob, and John are eventually going to have to take seriously the fact that the U.S. acts like an empire in mm-hmm. the world. Empires crumble. That's what my sign said. Just a little curse for people to take home with them.
I think the empire is crumbling, and I yeah. think people are trying to hold on to it with but these that, efforts.
But the people you're talking about,
yeah.
John, Jim, Bob, and Bob, Jared. Yeah, them.
Jim,
right?
Bob's one person.
Jim, Bob, and John. I'm sorry, that's two people. My bad. Well, shout out, y'all. Y'all are gonna have to eventually really consider this, because the U.S. is just not able to keep its good standing in the world anymore, that they were able to ever get it in the first place shows how military supremacy precedes sort of like global hegemony and attitudes, like how people perceive your image and how people behave based on this sort of like popularity contest almost in the world. The United States is no longer going to be able to be powerful. That's why they're lashing out like they are, because they have such a big military mm-hmm. budget, because Jim, Bob, and John have allowed that to get as inflated as it is in the military industrial complex. So if you don't have superiority anymore in terms of where you stand and how people see you as a leader anymore, well then yeah, you're gonna flex your guns and you're gonna show people how strong you are. And Trump just did that by assassinating the number two guy in Iran and escalating this further, and regardless of whether people mm-hmm. want it or not, and they don't, this is what's going to happen more. Yeah. They've got the money, they've got the guns, they're going to continue to flash it around. And I'm glad that we had this emergency rally today that we mm-hmm. just came from. But of course, there's going to have to be more and bigger action. And that's what I encourage people who are listening to keep an ear to the ground for, and just show up, be one of the voices, one of the numbers of people mm-hmm. who say no.
And I mean, Jim Bob and John are able to stomach this and take it because and continue to inflate it and like encourage it, because I mean, the basis of Trump, part of it is that the basis of Trump's entire presidency is that the empire is crumbling, and the problem isn't that we shouldn't be an empire and that we have too much power. The problem is that we've been weakened, and so I don't know, I was going to say that a long time ago, but the problem is that we've been weakened and that we could be so strong, and this idea that we're being abused and that we're somehow like an underdog on the global stage.
Even though, it's so delusional.
Even though we're completely the opposite. And the reason that we're crumbling, because it's true that we are crumbling and we are weaker than we used to be, but the problem isn't, but instead of understanding that the problem is that we had too much power in the first place and we're crumbling because we're meant to crumble, because people are fighting back and because it's not meant to be this way. Different countries are being pointed to and different kinds of people are being pointed to as the problem. And it's like this divide and conquer thing that we already know about. I feel like that's why people are so conditioned and fine with seeing this physical attack. Like, we don't even think about an attack on an airport in the Middle East. We don't think about what it would be like if an official was killed in the U.S. because an airport was bombed, because the fear-mongering around the Middle East is so deep that people just see it as like a place that contains terrorists and corrupt politicians. Like, the idea of that happening here is completely unfathomable to the people who are primed, who are able to just watch this and think that it's normal. And it is normal, but
But it's normalized.
It's normalized, but it's not definitely normal. Abnormal behavior.
Yeah. Like, it's abnormal behavior. It is normal. I mean, but not necessarily for us.
Yeah.
Like, I think about it. If, like, as a kid, if you're arguing with somebody, right, I'm yelling at my brother and I punch him in the face, my parents are like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you're taking this to a level mm-hmm. that is inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Go to timeout. Well, I probably would have gotten spanked, but...
Yeah,
you know, you are now in trouble. But it's like, on a global scale, somebody, you know, punching somebody in the face and just being like, take it, we're just having a little spat, mm-hmm. but now I'm going to actually start pummeling you, that's okay.
Yeah.
And the reason it's okay is because of Orientalism and the way in which people view the Middle East as this place that's constantly at war and mm-hmm. backwards and, you know, has all these issues. And it's like, no place is without its issues,
mm-hmm.
obviously. At the same time, if you are in a region that has had the constant interruption of colonial forces, the French, the British, the US, I'm sorry, like, your ability to grow and develop and move forward mm-hmm. and like develop your society the way you want to as a person who's from that region is going to be very much disturbed. And the Middle East isn't some backwards place that's constantly at war. It is the way it is because of constant foreign intervention
mm-hmm.
without the regard for the people who are there.
Yeah.
Complete disregard for the people that are there. Like, I think when people think of history, they think of it as being inevitable. That's not the case.
Mm.
Nothing had to happen the way that it mm-hmm. did, right? Because, like, there's plenty of actors, there's plenty of things that could have happened instead, but because we can't go back in time and change it, it's easy to just be like, well, it had to be this way. Mm. No, it didn't. Like, if we're looking at, back to the Middle East, the Israel and Palestine example, Theodore Herzl, the founder of modern Zionism, which is, you know, Israel's a Zionist state, Israel did not have to be in Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
There's no if you're looking at the readings, they considered plenty of places, including Argentina.
Former British colonies.
Former British colonies, right? Because the reason they're able to go there, the British are losing their power for their protectorate. They didn't want to lose it completely. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, well, if we get these Europeans, albeit they're Jewish, we'll let this happen. We'll let them be there and our interests will still be represented. Mm-hmm. It wasn't inevitable. It didn't have to happen that way. And then we get what we have now with the modern state of Israel and people using these strange religious justifications for it. So it's a region that's always been embroiled with religious, you know, frictions or whatever the words are using. When
if to give it a sense of inevitability.
Yeah, but it's not true at all. Like, if we're looking at it, like, Palestinians, Jewish, Muslim, Christian existed fine. Prior to
British colonization.
Yeah. Like, wherever the British flag flies, there tends to be some trouble happening. Yeah. And I think that's, I don't know. I just don't get, I don't know how to get people to look at, like, historical and material reality instead of just regurgitating information that they have heard. I don't know. I feel like if we were able to do that, then a lot of our problems would be solved.
The conception of Middle Eastern people as terrorists is deriving in part from in 1967 when Israel captured the West Bank.
That the
liberation organizations that popped up at that time in response and used terrorism to get their aims, that was so popularized and shown all over the world by the U.S.
terrorism which is resistance to you occupying my territory, get out.
So that played a very important role in the propaganda arm of the U.S. militaries and their allies in the media through imaging and messaging that somehow you get into the minds of ordinary Americans that there is something terroristic about Middle Eastern people. And that is how, when there is an open attack by the U.S. on a public airport in Baghdad, that there can be so many people who don't think much of that. But if that were to be done here or somewhere else where there are mostly white people, well, then that would seem much more of a of an issue. How is it that there can be such an open attack? Well, that says a lot of what we're getting to the heart of here, is that the violence against Middle Eastern people in the Middle East is seen as more permissible by too many. And this is why it's important that we have an emergency rally like today, and not just in Portland, but all over the world, and that there be a strong anti-war voice that comes from below, because we are simply not going to get an anti-war message that gets a fair hearing in the public consciousness as long as the media elite is so dominated by big money and people who are invested in the military industrial complex.
There's this weird, like, double consciousness around it, where it is, we are in this, people do think we're in this position, like Lamar was describing, about how we're being abused and we're losing our power, and when we enact violence against people and countries and territories in the Middle East, it's just kind of, the people who experience that are just kind of forgotten about, and we're fighting terrorism. But then on the same coin, we're also like saviors at the same time. We're so weak, but then we're these strong saviors on the other hand. And people only think about the working people, the regular people who are in the Middle East, when we're going in and saving it. Like, on, like, I was hearing officials on Democracy Now! Today talk about how when they killed Soleimani, people in, there were crowds in Iraq, which it was, is exaggerated. There were like some people doing some things and some people doing other things, like crowds of people in Iraq in the streets who were chanting, and how we were granting the people of these countries freedom. And yeah, it's this weird double consciousness that's there.
How can you grant freedom when you've already taken it away?
Like, yeah, it's never, and which is kind of just a thing around how we think about Middle Eastern people and how we think about Muslim people specifically, where it's a thing I think about a lot is how there's all these people in the U.S. who don't care about, like, who treat women like a certain way and don't care about women at all. But then all of a sudden you're a feminist because when you look at Muslim women, because you're so, like, disgusted that Muslim men and women in these countries, like, have to wear, I'm putting air quotes, have to wear a hijab or niqab or a burqa because of how terroristic and abusive the men in those countries are, but you didn't care at all about women before. Like, it's this...
You didn't care about Ray Rice beating
his wife.
You weren't a feminist then.
Right, or giving...
Islamophobic, saviorist perspective that we need to... has existed for a long time.
Yeah, if you poll people over there, then yeah, they're going to have all types of views on how things are going in their countries. It's very important for people to know that when we, certainly in this studio, but I would say more broadly, the anti-war left are not in support of governments abroad. I don't have... confidence in the ruling elite in the countries that the U.S. is bombing, occupying, having forces and stations in. I don't think that they're any saviors over there. Or liberators for that matter, champions of human rights. That's not where I'm at. The point is that people who are here who are not running the military, which is most of us, are in line or should be in line with people who are also not running the militaries in those countries over there. Ordinary civilians. There should be a more strong global peace movement that gets more of a hearing, but that's just not where we're at right now. Yeah. But it's the people... all across the world who are fighting for peace and freedom that I feel aligned with. I don't feel aligned with my government or theirs.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole situation with Iran just that we've been in over the last few months / years speaks so clearly to the failures of capitalism and imperialism. Because I remember, it was not very long ago, but I remember listening to the news a few months ago, hearing about how we are pulling out of the nuclear out of the Iran nuclear deal and all the outrage around it, and just thinking, like, I don't, like, care. Like, this is just two, like, ruling governments, like,
duking it out.
Like, we're putting sanctions on Iran. I don't want sanctions on Iran. I don't want sanctions to hurt, like,
the people in the government are not the people who are hurt by that. It's ordinary people. The people that are in the elite, they've got enough money that in their personal lives, their sanctions that aren't going to affect them.
It's the people, it's me and you that are going to be impacted by it. I don't.
But now, months later, we're looking at going to war with Iran because of the failure of their Iran nuclear deal, and so it's just like it just speaks so clearly to the failures of this entire system. And when you get to the end of that, I feel like at least for people who maybe, like, have that kind of formative memory of the war in Iraq, who are getting radicalized now, to see the situation that we're in, to see that the Iran nuclear deal failed, that it was kind of weak and at the meeting really useless anyway, and then to see that that after all of that work, in quotes, that Obama put into building that deal, how it just crumbled because Trump wanted it to, and now going to war with Iran, like, how this entire system, whether these ruling elite, whether these governments that are made up of the ruling elite are being diplomatic or aggressive, no matter what, it always ends up with the poorest, weakest people becoming poorer and weaker. And so I hope that maybe that will be more clear to people.
I personally wanted the nuclear agreement to not be changed. I wanted it to stay in place. Because from my perspective, while it is, you know, it's not the most radical thing that can be done, it is something that ensured that the working class people in both the U.S. and Iran were protected. And
from their governments.
Which is, I mean, that's what we need protection from.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily so much worried about my neighbor, but I am worried about the government kicking my door and blowing me down. Like, I'm worried about that. But when that gets removed, everything just continued to escalate. And because there's nobody, I don't know. I just, it seems hard to think that there's anybody that's, you know, entrusted in taking care of the country that's like really cares about everyday people here and abroad. But it doesn't, it's just so strange to me to not, because I'm an everyday person. Maybe if I wasn't, I would be, it would be easy to not care. But it's like, I mean, Supreme Ruler Ayatollah is gonna be fine. But I'm worried about, you know, the university students, the people who aren't going to school, the working class, the old people, the children, like
sick
those
people
are going to be impacted by this. And I think, I don't know, I think that's just harm that is so, that just doesn't have to happen. It just all seems so pointless.
So with that, I'll see you in the streets for the next time that people come together, and hopefully the numbers will be larger, the voice will be louder. There'll be more cities participating, and Portland will be able to have a strong showing. And maybe the anti-war movement will be great again.
And this is a this is an important and critical time for student organizers to be really looking around and being on their stuff, because one of the, to me, like one of the most powerful things we can do in the U.S. if you are a high school or university student and you're organizing or want to organize, is to target military recruiters on your campus, like as people who came of age during the war in Iraq. We know that this is a nightmare, that there is nothing good that can come from this, that, and that there's no point in like sending people to die in this thing that's been created and to kill people. So I just wanted to put that out and make a big point of that, is that this is like a critical time for student organizers, because
have there
the
been
military
have there been successful attempts to do that, to get recruiters out of schools?
I know there have been attempts, and like that's something that is focused, that has was focused on in the previous anti-war movement. I know people who were involved in that in their various communities. I wasn't personally involved in anything like that when I was in school, but that's because it wasn't the focus, because there wasn't, I mean, we're not in the period that we are now. But yeah, I know that that is something that has been successful in different people's communities, and it's critical right now because it's the military, like recruiters, like go to the campuses and hunt these and hunt people down, hunt working class people over here down to go to school and prey on savior complexes, prey on weaknesses, prey on being poor, like
low GPA, because you're not going to do anything anyway with your life, so just join the military.
I mean, you hear so many people
make yourself great. It's ridiculous.
You're so
not be allowed. Your brain isn't even fully developed. Like, why?
Yeah, especially when it's high schoolers. I'm like, this is an 18-year-old, like maybe 17 when you recruited them. There's so many people that you hear talk who are just like, I graduated high school, I was poor, I didn't know what to do, I didn't know what, so I just went in the military and then I got out of that and but it's toxic in multiple ways. I mean, I don't believe that doing that, like harming people is good for you, period. And it's also harmful to you. Like violence, especially if you're not a white man, like violence happens to people in the military. It strips you away from your life and your family to go do something that's posed as heroic when you tend to gain very little from it at the end of the day. And we still have Vietnam veterans on the street.
I know. Oh my God! If people ever go to the VA, if you take the bus up to OHSU, like on the hill, that's where it's at. A lot of times, if you're on the number 8 bus,
mm-hmm.
You can strike up conversations with people who are at the VA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ask those people what it was like for them. You know, like all of the people who get treated for PTSD, like horrendous, traumatic. This experience was for them. Like they're not getting any airtime when the recruiters are talking to young people. Like this could happen to you.
Yeah.
It could be avoided. And of course, the question never gets asked. Like, why are you poor? You
know, yeah.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't even be a question. Like, if you go into the, nobody should go into the military. War should not be an inevitability. Whatever. Like, knowing that, it should be a given that if you go into the military, you can come back and be fully treated, medicated comprehensively, as aggressively as possible for PTSD. But people are always kind of fixated on like, well, like, it gives you an education, like you can go and then you come back and you can be on the GI Bill and like you get an education. But it's just, I don't know, a mindset that we have in the US that's so distorted and we don't even realize it, where it's like, really, is that actually a gift? Like, is it worth, like, a college education that we're taught is like pretty much essential to living a decent life.
Yeah. In order to get.
In exchange for murdering people in the Middle East and experiencing post-traumatic stress and being pulled away from your family for months or years at a time.
Yeah. If you can make it out alive without too many effects of PTSD messing you up, well, then you might be able to go to college for free.
Yeah.
And that, of course, doesn't mention that free college is something that could be given out if it wasn't for the U.S. military taking up so much of the budget. You could have free college and that wouldn't be something that is a draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just funny. I mean, it's not funny, but like Jim Bob and Joe or whatever, Jim Bob and John, just don't realize that literally if we just minded our own business and threw away the vast majority, threw away a good portion of the money that we are using to do all this, like, we would be better than fine. Like, guys, so war is just such an inevitability.
Being fine isn't the best, though. You have to be the best. You have to be the greatest. Yeah. It's like being fine is, that doesn't suffice. It's like, we can't just, you know, be happy and mind our business and have clearer skin. We need to, you know.
My skin would be glowing.
We just need
wasn't for this.
interfere in other people's. It's just like,
I mean, that's what we need to think so that they can maintain their power.
What are you, but being, we've, the world police, just stop it, just cut it out.
Yeah, war is just such. I remember I was in a African American history class when I was doing my Black Studies minor at PSU, and this, and my professor, and people are gonna know who I'm talking about, and I don't care. My professor, who was from Sierra Leone, said to us in class, war is a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it. Oh. Like, war is just an inevitability to so many people. And it's out of this world, like, for so many reasons. Like, for reasons that fit into a neoliberal capitalist mindset and for reasons that fit into, like, a just and liberatory mindset. It doesn't have to be an inevitability. Like, it's greed at its finest, because it's just sheer violence only to obtain resources and power, and then telling the weak people that you're in charge of that it'll free the weak people that this other messed up government is in charge of. I mean, really, it's all about you just getting something.
Yeah, of course. This is going to be an important part of Trump's reelection campaign. So this is red meat to his base. That's what he's good at giving them everything except their basic needs, right? So they are given lots of racism, nationalism, imperialism, militarism. That's what they like. That's what is popular with his base. So he gives that to them, and there's actually no improvement to their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But they are meant to feel good that people who look like them are still in power, and they're flexing and using that power. And if he can make enough people afraid of the specter of retaliation from Iran and get people to dance along with the drums of war, then he's got it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have a second Trump presidency. I'm sorry that that's what that looks like. But the drums of war, you know, they play a catchy beat for some people. And if you don't already have it in your mind that people, regardless of what country they're from, deserve human rights and their basic needs met, then you're gonna have a hard time getting around the reality of the situation that we're in. The empire is crumbling.
Yeah, to add to the failures of capitalism and imperialism being so clearly drawn out on this stage right now. I'm sorry, maybe I'm silly, but like, I didn't know, I had no idea that you can be impeached, and I know Trump's still in power, but he technically impeached by the government, that you can be impeached and still fully run for president again. Like, I had no idea. So after all of this, you can still, like, I didn't know that. I had no idea until this just happened.
The party's behind him too.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, for all
and his people are behind him, and he's probably more emboldened because of how they've been beating him down. And
he's been abused. Not really. He's created every single conflict that he's been in,
mm-hmm.
right? But they see him as this person who is triumphing over all the people who keep trying to pull him down into the depths of hell.
And who was somehow an underdog before he ran for president.
It's just a complete...
An outsider.
And complete distortion of the way in which people are able to look at what's in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again... The closer you are to power, power in this case, cishet, white, Protestant, man, the closer you are to that, the easier it is for you to buy into that delusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And see and have that distorted amount of thinking.
His ratcheting against Iran was part and parcel of that... victimhood that you were talking about, Lamara, that he is able to say without cracking a smile that the U.S. is losing in the Iran deal or in any deal that's made internationally. Mm-hmm. That
he didn't make himself.
Yeah, so that the U.S. is getting a bad deal and we need to do better. And people hear that and they have not great lives. You know, something's missing in their life. They have a sense of emptiness, mm-hmm. Whether real or imagined. Mm-hmm. And they think, okay, well, that must be why my life feels like it's falling apart. So he's going to go to bat for me. I support him. And that's what I'm talking about. And that, like, if you don't already assume, if your starting place is not that every human being... because they were born, is entitled to human rights and their basic needs met, well, then you're going to be able to be tricked by this strong man move by somebody who is widely known to be a con artist. And you can even know that he's a con artist, and many of his supporters know that he's a con artist, but they love that he says what they think.
Mm-hmm.
And
they even like that he's a con artist because, again, our starting place, we're not taught that our starting place should be that most humans deserve decent, like, basic rights.
We're actually taught that by other people who are different than us having basic rights that infringes on our own rights.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important to realize is that if I don't know, I'm not a white man, but if I'm looking at the history of the U.S., it's like, for white people, specifically, when other people get rights, that means you're losing something, so you have to ensure that they don't get it, right? Mm-hmm. So if people who have historically been enslaved in this country gain their freedom, now you're not going to be able to have a job, right? You're going to have all this competition in the workplace, so you have to ensure that no matter what, these people are always below you in order to ensure your own safety, right? Mm-hmm. Air quotes around safety, but that's a big part of how we're socialized in this country. It's that if somebody else gets rights, that means I have less rights. that's not how anything works. We know from statistical analysis and from just data, when you lift the boat that's at the bottom, right, everybody starts to buoy up, right?
Yeah.
That's just what happens.
Yeah.
But there's so much talk and just factual information that says the contrary, and it's fear.
Yeah.
And we hold on to our fear because it feels okay. It makes us feel safe.
Yeah.
And when we're not fearful, we don't know what to do with ourselves. Like,
use your imagination. What a challenge.
Yeah, but it's like, I feel like for a lot of people that's a thing. Like, well, if these people are able to do this, then how I'm not going to be able to do that? And it's like, nobody said you would be able to not do that anymore. You'll be fine.
That has to be exhibited. And this is why I'm so grateful for everybody that came out to today's emergency action, and for people who continue to strive and get active around this, and for people who are coming into the movement now. We spoke about some of the shortcomings of the rally too, that people are not always ready to get loud and rowdy and say it like they mean it. And you know, we may joke and say, oh, that's because it's Portland, but I think it's a problem everywhere, that if you don't have an example of people who rise up against their own oppression and are successful, who are strong in it, well, then you're less likely to participate yourself. So that's a challenge to us. That means that the movement has to be strong and numerous enough that is something that can be overcome, that people feel more confident to get in the streets and to raise their voices collectively.
I'm hoping that all of the energy, I mean, this is happening at the same time that Australia is like literally coast to coast on fire, and people are dying and animals are dying, and it's an entire continent.
Ecosystems collapsing.
That people will intersect, and all of the energy around the climate change, around the pushback against climate change, will intersect with this pushback against a war in Iran.
This war is not sustainable. War is not good for the climate. That's just going to
The U.S. military. If the U.S. military was its own, if the U.S. military was its own country, it would be the 47th largest polluter in the world. Like, the U.S. military literally is entirely unsustainable. Like, entirely unsustainable, entirely economically, like, inefficient. Anyway, but yeah, it's a major polluter, and I think people really underestimate that, because, again, war to us is inevitable. Having a giant military that can go to war at any second is, like, running water here. Like, people just think that it happens, and it just has to happen, and it always will happen, but it doesn't have to happen. And like, our world would actually be much safer, and this is actually going to participate in like the escalation and rabidizing of climate change, like at this moment where people are so attuned to that. And so I'm hoping that there will be an acknowledgement there.
Can you pull up the flyer for the Beyond Elections event this weekend?
So yeah.
I want people to know about the Pop Mob event. Pop Mob is short for Popular Mobilization. They're an organization that has been doing work to confront far-right activity in the Portland area. The idea is to quite simply speak out against them whenever they seek to spread their ideas and have public events that put marginalized communities at risk. That's who they target. That's who they want to attack first, to be able to show their power. And this is like out of the right-wing authoritarian playbook, and they're doing their part to make it happen. So popular mobilization is a community effort to try to confront that and to make very clear that anti-fascism is the duty of decent people, that regardless of where you're at on the political spectrum, that your aversion or your being against fascism is going to require popular mobilization. Mm-hmm. It's going to mean that you're going to have to show up and confront them. So they've done a number of actions in the city, and they've been successful. So Milkshake and the Spectacle were the biggest ones this year, and there's going to be an event this weekend that we want to tell people about, and Olivia's got the flyer.
Yeah, so the event that Alyssa's talking about is called Beyond the Ballot Box, A Diversity of Tactics. It's being held at PICA, which is the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art. If you don't know, that's at 15 Northeast Hancock. And again, being hosted by Popular Mobilization, co-hosted by Portland Democratic Socialists of America. This is after 4 years of increasingly hateful rhetoric and violence from both our far-right government and local fascist groups. We are about to head into the 2020 election cycle, which is surely to only sure to only amplify these problems. The question remains, how do we keep us safe? Again, not the United States, not the empire, but us regular people who are not warmongers and are part of the ruling elite. Now is an important time to step back to critically examine and assess what is meant by terms like, quote, community defense, and consider how it serves our larger political struggle. It's time to look beyond 2020 and talk about how we win, how we win. Please join us for a panel with representatives from DSA, Pop Mob, Portland Jobs with Justice, to grapple with these questions. The door is open at 5 p.m. The panel begins at 6. There will be tabling from different organizations. There will be prizes to win. There will be music and food. ASL, American Sign Language Interpretation, will be available, as well as childcare. If you need childcare for this event, email panelchildcare@gmail.com. And it's ADA accessible. There is limited parking. So, yeah, sounds like it'll be a good event. And
that's tomorrow or
Sunday? Sunday at 5.
Okay.
Panel starts at 6. And this event's been on the calendar for a while, but is only becoming increasingly more relevant as we get closer to the election and as we head into this period where we might be thrown into irreversible, temporarily irreversible imperial violence.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The main message that I think people are going to be able to come away with is that it's not that elections have no bearing, but the effects of policies are going to be felt by poor and oppressed communities, and that there's going to have to be more effective local organizing that's meant to keep us safe, that doesn't depend on the police, if people have any chance at all of being able to keep each other safe.
Which is somewhat separate from what we've been talking about for this entire show, but a part of breaking with the ideology of the empire, a part of breaking away from these ideas that war is inevitable and that we're being and that the United States is being abused and that we are these saviors who need to have this giant military, is by understanding that we can keep ourselves safe and that we can provide for ourselves by ourselves, without rulers, without like rich evil babysitters who guide our every move, that people actually know themselves, know their lives, know their communities, and have the power to be governed and helped within themselves. That is critical to breaking this imperialist violent cycle.
And I mean, the military and the police are
here
are coordinated and connected. Mm-hmm. I mean, many people who can't make it in the military then decide to join the police to, you know, do whatever it is they think that they're going to be doing. Yeah. So that's also always a connection that's there, you can't go and kill people abroad, so you do it here instead.
Mm-hmm. And so you use the same weapons made in the same factories. Some
and
of the
you're
same
trained
weapons.
As if you everybody around you is an enemy combatant.
Yeah,
that's how police are trained, mm-hmm. and that's how the military is trained. So mm-hmm. it's no surprise that they harm marginalized communities the way that they do.
So also from Pop Mob, that they want people to know this is fun. We need some fun. We need some light. The Pop Mob stuff is usually very fun, very gay, mm-hmm. and like meant to bring some levity to really heavy times. Join us for hot cocoa Sunday evening. We'll have hot chocolate and vegan options, marshmallows and rainbow sprinkles. We'll also have panel discussion with over 15 organizations tabling, zine stickers, free food, and bingo with prizes. Again, that's Sunday, January 5th. Doors open at 5. That's at PICA, Portland Institute for Contemporary Art. Thank you very much for listening to The Struggle. We'll be here next week live in studio. Lamar, thank you for coming to the action and talking about it and sharing your expertise.
No problem.
Olivia, see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle. Every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KBOO Community Radio.
I wish somebody would come and ease my troubling mind.
Oh, from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. We will ease your troubled mind with licensed mental health counselor, Cheryl Jefferson. Political analysis provided by the Prophet of Rage. And calling in from the planet of rhythm and blues, musicologist Professor Soul. From the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. I'm your host, Lanita Duke.
They tell me when you tell somebody your troubles, trouble fly away from you.